Wisconsin's public schools are starting up classes next week, and for many students, laptops, iPads, and smart boards are going to be part of the experience. All that technology lets us access information and connections in ways we couldn't before, but some are concerned about what we might be losing in the process.
Our next guest says that the push for personalized digital education is leaving out a lot of what makes learning effective. He says that some of the best learning happens when kids are using all of their senses and doing things with the people and physical world around them.
Nicholas Tampio is an associate professor of political science at Fordham University and the author of the book Common Core, National Education Standards and the Threat to Democracy. Nicholas, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, Judith. Glad to be here.
First of all, can you talk about what we mean when we say screen learning?
So if you go to Google Images and you type in computer-based education or competency-based education, you'll see rows of children sitting at computers, often with headsets, looking at bright images, clicking and dragging and typing. And under this model, teachers will be on the side and they'll sort of help kids log in, log off, deal with technical difficulties. But for much of the school day, kids will be looking at screens and doing their education. And all sorts of people are describing this as sort of a cure-all for education. And I wrote my piece in Eon to sort of raise a red flag and say, listen, everybody knows that computers have certain powers and help kids find information. But when you make it the basis of an education, that's bad.
So we'll get into what neuroscience and even philosophy has to say about this, but from your perspective, what do you think screens aren't providing kids in the learning experience?
Well, if you ask me what I remember of school, I'll tell you performing in a school play, being a school patrol, running cross country, participating in the debate team. These are all activities that were special, were extra, not learning to read, write, do arithmetic, do computer type stuff. And part of the reason that I care about this is I'm looking for my own children, and I just see the special parts of education being more and more marginalized. And the fact is that education should inspire children. A good education will inspire children to keep learning on their own. And I am just really nervous about when you have kids staring at a computer all day. I mean, the word that comes to mind is monkey brain, that they just, click and dash and they can't follow a sustained argument and they don't care about what they're learning because it's all so abstract and they're not making friendships in the same way when you're playing and wrestling and talking with other people, and they're not making connections with their teachers. So part of what I really want to argue is that these things are important. Human beings, we have bodies, and a good education will engage the body.
Well, and it seems like this issue really came into focus for you when you took a family trip to a farm. Tell us about that experience and what you saw your kids doing that really kind of brought this home to you.
So I go to a farmer's market, and one day the farmer, I don't know what vibe I was giving off, but she said, let me introduce you. We have a farm stay where we have a RV on our farm, and we welcome people to stay up, and they pay, pretty reasonable rates. And the whole purpose is to learn about farm life, to learn where the food comes from and what it means to be a farmer. And I have young children, and even though we live in the suburbs of New York City, my kids are at heart. They love to be outside and love to be in nature. So I said, okay, this sounds like a wonderful opportunity. And it was just, on one level, it was a very simple trip. We were learning, seeing how eggs were collected or where pigs live or how cows are fed and are watered and how the manure is cleaned up. So from one angle, it could be a very mundane experience. But just as a parent, I just said, holy cow, my kids, I can see their synapses firing. I could just see them full of joy and happiness. And, one of the great moments that actually didn't make it into the Eon essay, but, in an earlier draft, was I would watch my kids drop a leaf at the beginning of a stream, and they would run along the stream as the leaf was making its way down. And I said, you know what? I can't tell you what difference this is going to make for them and as an adult, right? I don't think as adults they're going to be chasing leaves down a stream. But the fact is that they are learning about about how things in nature work, how things move, how water works. They were cooperating, they were laughing, and I said, you know what, this is a really good image of the kind of education that I want to defend.
Well, and it was really interesting as I was reading your piece because, you know, you talked about it's not just, you know, you're on the farm and you're seeing things, but they were carrying things, so they were using their muscles and they were learning to tell the different sounds between the pigs and the sheep and how they were reacting when they came in. So they were hearing things and obviously they were smelling things, but they were tasting those fresh eggs. And one of the things that really struck me is you talked about watching them interact with the farmer too, as the farmer was explaining things to them, and that eye contact, face-to-face communication is something that you say is really missing in that screen learning.
Absolutely. So when you think about computer-based education, children are watching a screen and, you know, they're not learning nothing. They are learning something. But one of my friends who studies international relations, he's a professor at William & Mary, Marcus Holmes, and he does the neuroscience of diplomats. And what he discovered is that there's a good scientific basis for why diplomats insist on meeting face-to-face. And the fact is you can get a much deeper level of trust when you're meeting face-to-face. And so one thing is that if you're on a screen with somebody, talking to them on a screen, you don't know who's in the background of that image, right? You can see their face, but you can't see if their hands are moving or fidgeting. You can't see if their feet are kicking. You can't see if somebody else is right around the corner making funny faces. So you never fully trust the experience as much as when you're face-to-face and you can see the whole environment. You can sort of feel the mood in the air. And you know, my friend Marcus Holmes actually did investigation on mirror neurons, and there's a good scientific basis for the fact is that when we can see each other, we can pick up microfacial movements that give us a much more precise estimate of what the other person is thinking than even the most high-resolution screen. So for me, the farmer and the farm experience illustrated the point that being physically present, looking people in the eye, provides a much richer experience than doing anything analogous on computers.
We're talking with Nicholas Tampio right now. He's an associate professor of political science at Fordham University. And we're talking about what we might be losing with the move to more and more digital learning and screen learning. And Nicholas, you also looked at philosophy to partly explain why screen learning is being adopted so widely. Tell us, in non-philosopher terms, how Western philosophy has looked at mind and body and learning.
So when you talk about these on-screen learning, virtual reality or the most high-tech games, Fortnite or various ways people communicate nowadays, you think, all right, nobody in the history of philosophy could have ever anticipated this. But there's this French philosopher whom I like named Maurice Merleau-Ponty, and he wrote this book, The Phenomenology of Perception, that is a classic, and it deserves to be a classic. And his basic insight is that philosophers have not taken sufficient account of how the body influences how we learn, that Western philosophy, going back to Plato, really privileges the eye, and they really think of the mind as something separate from the rest of the world. So the mind looks through the eye and acquires information, and then it goes into the brain, and then the mind processes the information. And Maurice Merleau-Ponty, he says, actually, the way that you learn is by moving your body. And that's really a brilliant way to think about it, right? When you're running down a hill, you're not thinking, oh, I'm going to put my foot there because that'll bear my weight, and I'll put my foot there, and then I'll put my foot. No, you don't do that. You're running down a hill, and you're just trying to survive, and you have to trust your body. And I think Merleau-Ponty's insight applies to most human actions, right? When you're communicating with a friend, you're not writing a script in your head and then saying the words. Your body is spontaneously creating these words and thoughts and patterns, and every now and then your conscious brain can modulate or maybe even stop one of those sentences, but really it's our body is speaking for us. And when you take Merleau-Ponty's ideas seriously, which I do, it means that education should really be about training your entire body, that it can't just be about reading or looking at screens or looking at the world from a distance. You actually have to touch the world to learn.
So Merleau-Ponty has been advocating this kind of whole body experiential learning, but are his ideas the ones that have been picked up by educators in the United States?
Oh, not at all. Not at all. So one argument that I did not make, I intentionally did not make it, I did not try to say that the people pushing screens are trying to make money. And because the fact is that certain parents will say, well, it doesn't matter if they're trying to make money. If they're selling a good product, they deserve to make money. So I did not make that argument. And so I tried to consider their best argument and say, listen, there's a tradition in Western philosophy that privileges the eye and eyesight. And so people who are advocating technology and screens are part of a long tradition. And the fact, you do learn things from screens. But I wanted to say that we're doing a real disservice to children when we have them play with blocks on computers rather than physical blocks. And, you know, people, some listeners might think, oh, my gosh, Professor Tampio is joking. Look at some of the kindergarten apps, and you'll see what kind of things could be on the horizon.
We're talking with Nicholas Tampio right now. He's Associate Professor of Political Science at Fordham University, and his recent essay for Eon Magazine is called Look Up From Your Screen. We're talking about how digital learning compares with interacting with the world and other people.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you agree with Nicholas that learning is at its best when we're using all of our senses in our full bodies? If you're an educator, has digital learning helped you in the classroom? Or do you try to wrap those real-world experiences into your lessons? And if you're a student right now, what kind of learning works best for you? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@wpr.org. Right now, we're picking up our chat with Nicholas Tampio, Associate Professor of Political Science at Fordham University. He is here to say that we need to get students learning with all of their senses and not rely so much on screens in the classroom.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you think digital learning is a positive thing for education, or are we losing something when students aren't physically engaged with the world around them? If you're a teacher, what are your thoughts about screen learning? And if you're a student, do you think you learn better when you use more than just your eyes and a screen? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can send us an email at ideas@wpr.org. And Nicholas, you also looked to neuroscience to show why simply interacting with other human beings is important to engage the mind and really learn things deeply. What did you find there that support your perspective?
So there's been a revolution in neuroscience with the discovery of mirror neurons. And so the old model of the brain is that your eyes see something, the information goes into your brain, you form a thought and a reaction, and then you act. And but the new mirror neuroscience of mirror neurons says that actually when they can map the brain and map the mental brain energy, and when somebody smiles at you, your muscles start to move in a smile before you're even aware of it. So it's there's not a pause between seeing and responding, that as a being in the world, you're constantly sort of making adjustments to other people, right? So when a waiter or a waitress smiles, you feel good, right? You like the restaurant, you're having a good time, and it makes a difference. And so there have been all sorts of experiments that have been shown about how mirror neurons work. And for me, that's a really fascinating idea to think about how important it is to actually be physically present with other people. That there's this education scholar named Diane Ravitch, and she said that part of the education reform movement is this dream of that one teacher, according to Ravitch, citing a reformer, working by themselves in a barn in Kansas, educating hundreds of people. And you know, there's an appeal to that, economies of scale, about quality control, about preventing bad teachers from getting too much power, right? Those are all the, there are certain good arguments for that kind of model of education. And yet I wanted to say, listen, we are not going to give children the best education if we are not giving them opportunities to make connections with other human beings. And actually, you have to be physically present. You cannot make the same level of friendship via screens.
Let's go to the phones, and Susie in New London is up. Hi, Susie.
Good afternoon. I completely agree with the author. I'm a teacher of 30 years of experience at multiple levels, and I have used technology in the classroom. I'm always excited about a new tool that can enhance something so that I can do it better and be more effective. But I think the place where our students are falling down the fastest is in interpersonal skills, and it's being enhanced by the use of too much technology. And I think it's reflected in society at large today. And I think the movement away from the teacher-centered classroom is enhancing that problem.
Thanks for that call, Susie. And so, Nicholas, it sounds like Susie is very welcoming of new tools, but they have to be tools to enhance the real way of learning.
Yeah, well, I come at this topic as a political scientist, and so I draw upon philosophy and neuroscience. But my concern as a political scientist, and I agree with Susie, that what kind of society are you going to create if kids grow up looking by themselves, not knowing how to talk to people who are different? And you're not going to build social capital. You're not going to build trust. You're not going to build the ability to communicate. It will lead to atomism, individualism, incredible loneliness, and the demise of democracy. So I 100% agree with Susie.
Some topics might seem more naturally to lend themselves to a full body learning experience, but it seems like there are some topics that it might be hard to do. I'm thinking of something like mathematics, maybe literature. Are those going to need to be taught with books or screens, or do you see ways to liberate the learning experience for any subject?
Well, I think you have to look at the different ages. And my essay is not an attempt to answer all of the questions about what's the best way to educate children, right? That is a subject of ongoing debate and discussion. Just one example that I can give, though, is that there's actually a difference between reading a book and reading a screen. That reading a screen, I might get this wrong, but I think I'm going to try to get it right, that reading a screen activates the parasympathetic nervous system. So it actually, the diodes from the screen get your fight or flight movement reaction, that you don't relax in the same way when you read a screen as you do when you read paper and a physical artifact. Your sympathetic nervous system is engaged when you're reading a book. So actually reading a book can be more relaxing. And common sense agrees with that. People don't sit down, some certainly do, but people are not reading huge books on screens, that people still prefer to read paper books, especially for hard subjects, for philosophy, for social science. I mean, clearly people can find short articles on the internet that are fine, but for sustained concentration, you really can't beat paper. We should have that conversation. I certainly believe for the higher grades that education can be more abstract, that you don't need to be following leaves for very far in your education, but I certainly think that for the early grades, a high-tech education is just a huge mistake.
We're getting a little short on time. I want to make sure we can get to Erin in Green Bay. Hi, Erin.
Hi.
Go ahead.
So I teach at a high school level, and I have found that, we have this big push of, technology, 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 and you get to about lunchtime and some of the students get burned out on technology. They don't want to look at their Chromebook anymore. They don't want to look at the iPads anymore. And I found that I don't get rid of technology completely in my classroom, but the classrooms that have the best, inter-student dialogue and the best community of learners are where we actually, we take a time out from technology. We have conversations with each other. We go, talk to the early childhood kids if we're learning about child development and things like that. So I agree that we need all five sentences. five senses, but I think we need to do it in a way where we realize that kids don't want to look at screens all day.
And Aaron, thanks for that call. And Nicholas, before we run out of time, I do want to touch on the point that technology costs money, obviously, but also it can cost money to make sure that those students have that full body experience, whether it's getting them out of the classroom or having, you know, enough staff to be able to kind of facilitate that. Do you see this as maybe having some economic disparities?
Well, I mean, I think the equity argument can cut both ways. I'm based in New York, and the state education department tweeted that technology in the classroom was an equity issue, that we have to make sure that all children get technology. And I thought, well, you know, let's have a serious conversation about what kind of technology is good for students and which kind of student technology is bad for students. I mean, one of the classic ways to learn about biology is to have a garden. So I wish that more and more schools had gardens. I wish that schools had field trips, that kids could go out and see where chickens lay eggs and where beef comes from and what it means to milk a cow. And so rather than just keep putting more and more money into technology, into Wi-Fi, into broadband, into personal computers, I would love to see some of that money redirected and say, how can we get children the full body experiences that wealthy, educated parents take for granted?
And we'll leave it there. Nicholas Tampio is a professor of political science at Fordham University. His recent essay for Eon Magazine is called Look Up From Your Screens.